Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation with Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte, episode 42 for February 29th, Leap Day 2012. Bobby Llewellyn. This episode of Triangulation is brought to you by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker who needs stock video clips, photos, illustrations, music tracks, or sound effects, check out Pond5 for instant downloads at the best prices anywhere. Pond5.com. And for 25% off this month, use the code TWIT25. It's time for Triangulation, the show I look forward to all week. Our chance, Tom Merritt and I, get to interview somebody of you know, great brain, great mind, interesting person. And today we have an old friend. Both Tom and I have worked with him in the past. He's legendary in the UK. Less known here because the show Red Dwarf that he was one of the stars of didn't... I think it was certainly seen in the U.S., but it was a cult hit in the U.S. He's also hosted... it's Scrap Heap. And he's the host of a fantastic...
They don't have yards, they have gardens.
That's right.
Scrap Heap.
No yard. And the yard is a garden. No, the garden is a yard. And then, of course, he does a fantastic podcast that I was on not so long ago called Carpool. Ladies and gentlemen, Bobby Llewellyn, Robert Llewellyn. It's so great to have you. I still have... Bobby, your stack of novels that you've written, too. I don't know if people are aware of that. You're also a novelist.
I am indeed, yes. I've done a bit of that. Done a bit of scrawling.
Done a lot of everything. Lewtube.com, LEWTUBE.com is where you can go to find past episodes of Carpool. Although you told us you're on hiatus for a little bit.
On hiatus for that one. I'm doing the other show that's also on that site is called Fully Charged, which is
the green show.
I don't like using the green word, but it's about the future of energy, electric vehicles, renewable energy, those sort of topics that I didn't realize were as contentious as they are, but they are contentious
are they?
And therefore.
No.
Well, I'm surprised, but yes, they can be contentious. They can upset people.
Well, the word green, we did a show called Green Tech Today, I think, and it wasn't well received. No, people liked it. It was one of the best shows, I think, the most beautiful shows we've ever done. But I think the word green sounds preachy a little bit. People don't.
Yeah, that's the problem with it.
I don't want green. I don't. But but it's Top Gear for green vehicles. How about that? No, that's bad.
That's not good.
That's not going to work either.
But you're right about the electric car controversy. I mean, I see it on Twitter if it ever comes up. In fact, some people just pick fights with me out of nowhere because they happen to know I drive a Prius. And they're like, it's worse for the environment than a regular car.
Yeah, always worse. Yeah, the batteries in your Prius, according to Twitter, are worse than if you drive a Challenger 2 tank backwards through a kindergarten. That's how much damage it does every foot that you drive it. Because they don't exaggerate ever.
No, I love according to Twitter. It used to be according to Hoyle, maybe the Britannica. Now it's Twitter. I love it. Well, it's so great. Yes. Bobby, welcome to the show. It's so great to
have you.
Thank
you. I'm very thrilled to be on. That's great. It's a great
You just
great
completed
pleasure.
What season? I mean, so Red Dwarf was on for some years ago.
But it just had its 24th birthday a couple
Holy
of weeks back.
Holy cow. And it was brought back a couple of years ago. I know because when you were visiting us in the States, you were excited because it looked like they were going to do some more episodes.
That's right, So we did three, a sort of special three-episode special a couple of years back, which was the first time for 10 years. None of us ever expected to do it again. We'd all kind of moved on and gone on to do other things. So the last proper series we made was in 1998, where we made a series which we recorded in front of an audience like we always did. And then there was a long gap. 2008, we made these three specials, and then we've just finished... about 4 weeks ago, a complete new series, which again was recorded in front of an audience with the same cast, same crew in the background. A lot of the same people worked on the show. And, I mean, you can't judge when you're in it, but the audience response was amazing. And they all said, in this is where Twitter has an enormous advantage. They all said, classic Dwarf.
Oh,
it's as good
great.
As any of the ones, which is really encouraging to hear because, you know, it's hard for us to judge being covered in whatever we're covered in when we're doing it.
You're a robot with a rubber face, a rubber prosthetic over your face while you're doing the acting, which has got to be challenging. Although, as Tom pointed out, you're the only member of the cast who doesn't age.
That's true. I mean, annoyingly, the rest of the cast are remarkably youthful in their very fit. Danny John-Jules, the actor who plays the cat, is wearing exactly the same costume he was wearing 20, 23 or 22 years ago. That's so he hasn't put on an ounce. It's just infuriating. We all hate him.
Taking away your advantage.
Well, I'm sure he also made a point of talking about that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I am wearing the same outfit I wore. That's exciting. And there are a lot of people, by the way, on Twitter now who are very excited about you appearing. I'm going to retweet a couple of these because it is a cult following here in the States. Certainly.
I watched it on PBS because that was the way to get it in the 80s, early 90s, and loved it. You know, it was just one of those things that if you're into sci-fi, if you're a geek, you immediately took to it.
Well, and I like comedy sci-fi. Mm-hmm. I prefer that actually. When it's dead serious, you almost feel like they should be comedy. But when it's funny and laughing, it's, you know, it's really fun. It's a genre that's easy to spoof, and kind of loans itself well to that. So, did you resolve the cliffhanger from the last time?
I'm not allowed to say anything
about
the new series. Oh. Boy, are we under strict. There's a very strict NDA that we'll all blow it. I'm sure. I mean, essentially, in terms of storyline, it's never really worried about following on.
No, that's true. That's a good
it's
point.
Not one of the, yes. Yeah. So, but I mean, no, I can't. I'm not allowed to divulge because I have said one or two things just inadvertently. I didn't even realize, and I suddenly realized I gave away half the plot. So,
will you ever see your children again?
Yes. I'm wondering. I hope so.
So, when does the next season?
Well, it will go out in this country in end of September, beginning of October. They haven't given a specific date yet, but it will also be released. I mean, because of the way media is distributed now, I mean, it's going to be on Netflix in the United States very soon after that. I think there are quite a few PBS stations playing it. I'm not quite sure of how it's going out, but the idea is to release it globally before Christmas, so it's not going to be a great long wait after that.
It does seem like networks and distributors and production companies are starting to catch on that they can't keep it under wraps
right. It will
globally
get out.
Yeah. anymore. Yeah. Doctor Who premieres now on the same day worldwide.
Thank goodness.
Even the Christmas episode is actually on Christmas in the United States instead of in July like it used to be.
I mean, the thing is that everybody knows that you can watch it anyway if you don't do that. You know, I mean, we certainly discovered that last time. I mean, Red Dwarf was on, on a BitTorrent within, I think it was something like 35 minutes of it first going out.
That's
so it doesn't. So everybody can watch it anyway. So don't bother and put it out. You know, if you're a TV channel in another country, what's the advantage? And there's now no longer an advantage for a broadcaster in this country or anyone to hold it back. You know, you may as well keep it going.
Yeah,
you know, you may as well release it all at the same time. It makes so much sense.
It'll be on Dave again in the UK.
On Dave. Yeah.
I like it that they have a channel with a first name. We don't have anything like that.
We don't, do we?
I mean, that channel was called UK Comedy Gold or something like
Dave
that.
Dave is had much this, better.
Yeah, it had a tiny, tiny audience that you know, who might bother to watch it. And they changed it to Dave, and it's had these phenomenal figures. I mean, it's done really well.
Because everybody loves Dave.
How do you get better than Dave?
Friendly.
Yeah.
That's why I've been cheering for British Columbia to rename themselves Bob. There's a small but growing movement.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'd like that. I think that'd be very good.
Yeah.
Now, 20 years ago, there was an attempt to make, I didn't realize this, but I'm reading Wikipedia. Tell me if this is Wikipedia BS. An attempt to make a U.S. version of it.
With an
all-new cast, but you were the one holdover from the original cast.
That's right. No, it was wasn't it? I mean, it was an amazing experience. I mean, in fact, it's
I bet it's bootlegged. I bet it's around.
It is. It's on. It's on, bits of it. I've never seen the whole thing on YouTube. There's lumps of it on YouTube, certainly.
Yeah.
It was it was 92. We did that.
Right.
It was at Universal Studios, and Amazing cast, including Jane Leaves, who played Holly the computer, who went on to be in Frasier very successfully for years. She was the nurse with the, with the quite interesting British accent. she is British, but she's from quite a posh part of Surrey. She's from quite an upmarket area. And she was playing a northern accent, which is something like that. But actually, when I do that, I realise I'm quite good at it. And
she wasn't.
I'd be very rude about it because she's a lovely woman, and I do like her very much. And she's brilliant comic actress. But her accent confused a lot of.
How many episodes of the US version?
No, it was just one pilot. They didn't get greenlighted.
So you could identify with the It crowd. And in fact, Moss, Richard Ayoade, was the only one who made the jump over for the It crowd to the US version, and they only made the pilot, and that never aired.
It's almost identical circumstances. A very common experience. Well, I don't know if you remember or if you ever saw a series called The Young Ones.
Many
years ago. Well, that was done exactly the same thing happened. I mean, a very old friend of mine is in that, Nigel Planer, who played the hippie with the long hair. And he came over to the States to do the pilot of The Young Ones for an American channel, and which was great to know him, to know that he'd done that when I was going through all the sort of decisions about whether I should go and do this. And he did the pilot, and it was never picked up. I mean, it very obviously happens more often than we know.
So just a note that anybody who wants to catch up with the first 9 seasons of Red Dwarf, they're on Netflix, and I presume that the season you're doing will, as you said, shortly be on there as well, so you can see it all. And there's a nice picture of the cast right there.
That is very good. Yeah, I don't think I've seen that pic before, actually.
That's a great one,
interesting.
Yeah. Well, you must have posed for it. Of course, you were in a rubber head, so maybe you didn't notice.
Yeah, I can't remember anything. You know.
could easily happen, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's a smart thing. This is, you know, Netflix is doing it with Lilyhammer, which they acquired from a
Norwegian television
network.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
And now Red Dwarf is, they're able to say, like, hey, we're the place that watch it. You want to watch it? Come here.
Well, so Lilyhammer was not a Netflix exclusive. It was
a joint production. Netflix gave them some money, but it was done by a Norwegian television.
That way, get first dibs on the on the streaming. So, how did you get into podcasting, Bobby? What I mean, God, you're a man of many talents, but why podcasting?
Well, I don't know how I got into any of it, though. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean,
really?
What a crazy thing.
What are you, insane?
I was barking mad. I mean, the thing is that when I was doing Scrap Heap, I was in contact with a lot of amazing engineers and scientists and people who were developing things. And I saw some very, very early but high-performance electric vehicles that we never did anything about on the show, but I was really intrigued by. And, I mean, I was an absolute dyed-in-the-wall petrol head. I had a big old Land Rover with a V8 engine with big exhausts. And, you know, I wasn't an eco-warrior or a tree-hugger by any means. But although I've hugged the odd tree, you know. But hug it out of the window of my Land Rover.
Who hasn't? That's right. As you're chopping it down, you hug it.
As I was sawing it down, I'd hug it. Chuck it in the back of my Land Rover.
It's going to be okay.
but then I did start to come across things. And in fact, as you say, Tom, I mean, the one of the vehicles I was really intrigued by, when we were making Junkyard Wars, I was working in California, in Los Angeles, and someone gave me a ride home in a what looked to me like the dullest kind of Japanese import dust-covered Los Angeles car, which was, in fact, the first model Prius. And it was just extraordinary. And I had no idea what made it work. And I had to look under the bonnet when we got home and saw it had an electric motor in it. And I was just going, wow, that is amazing. I didn't know anything about it. I hadn't heard any of the sort of pre-launch hype about it. And that kind of got me intrigued in the whole thing. Then came back to the UK, traded in a ridiculously fast, tuned up a car called a Golf R32, which is a Volkswagen Golf with a very large engine. And my brother works in motor racing, so I'd had it rechipped. So it went.
Ooh.
I did do 164 miles an hour on a track in a Golf, which is quite scary. But I traded that car in for a Prius, and that kind of changed my whole attitude to the whole thing. And then out of that grew a kind of interest in trying to make something about that subject outside the kind of traditional TV industry that I'd worked in for 20 years. And that's just at the time that the kind of internet was starting to deliver video. So YouTube was starting, all those things. I think I came across you, Leo, quite early on in that process, and I can't remember how I first heard about you, but then I suddenly realized, wow, this is a guy who's sort of, well, I think I'd very close in age. Mm-hmm.
I think so, yeah.
And you come out of a sort of traditional TV background, and then you're doing this, and I was getting, and that was very inspirational. I think I saw a YouTube interview with you from a TV channel, I guess, a local TV channel near you, where you were just walking down the street, and they showed you in your studio. This is, I guess, before you were in the Twit Cottage.
Oh, even. Maybe, yeah.
It would have been very early on in the history of it, and that just inspired me to go, hang on then, this is quite exciting. So you can make something yourself. Because, I mean, up to that point, all I'd done is work with, you know, pitching things with production companies, going to see people in TV broadcasting companies to try and convince them to do it. And, I mean, I'd had not an unsuccessful career in television, but a huge amount of frustration with, particularly with comedy, where I would, there was one particular event, I'll try and do it as quickly as I can, but I was on stage one night doing a show in front of an audience that was getting enormous laughs, standing ovations, people cheering, lots and lots of laughter, lots of positive reviews. Then I went to a TV channel the next day to pitch that live show as a television channel. They had the script. The young man that had read the script just said, I don't think it's funny.
Oh, and, God. How frustrating.
So you're just sitting there, and I mustn't be really rude, or I mustn't actually physically attack him. But I'd sort of say, well, I know it is funny. And I know that experience.
People were laughing.
Because people were laughing, yeah. Yes.
Somebody. That's heard. Usually a symptom.
You're outnumbered, sir.
It is that I think there's a crucial turning point when the people that commission television become younger than you.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
Certainly, in my early career, it was all sort of old blokes.
But and they were always dumber than you, though. You knew that, right?
Well, I'm sure they're not. No, I've met some highly intelligent and brilliant people in television commissioning because I'm still up for
Yeah, I'm sorry. Games. What am I thinking? Yes, they're very, and good looking.
They're all,
yes.
And they're all very handsome.
Very.
So there was a kind of frustration there and also the kind of lure of, wait a minute, you can get straight to the audience.
Right.
There's nothing in the way. I mean, it was very much that ethos that got me going. And then, so it was a combination of that. And then it was, the complications of how do I do this? Do I set up a studio and try and make things there? I tried all sorts of experiments, but it was one of those moments which you can't plan for. But we used mini cameras on scrap heap very regularly. We would strap tiny little video cameras to the machines so that you could see them in operation when they were clanking around and falling to bits. And the camera crew called them suicide cameras, which because they often got smashed to bits. And so I got a couple of secondhand cameras like that. They're like lipstick cameras, very,
right.
very small.
Right.
And I sort of toyed with it and I stuck them in the car. And then I actually, the first two videos I made like that, one is with my son, who at the time would have been 13 or 14. And it can't be broadcast, but it is very amusing because he has sort of mild Tourette's is what we call it.
He swears a lot.
He does some swearing, and he blames his mother. He says, "I can't help it; it's my mother. She's Australian." But in that sentence, there'd be nine other swear words that he'd added.
Yeah, I have a 17-year-old. I think I know. I think I know that language that he's speaking. Yeah.
What was interesting was that within 5 miles of driving, less 5 minutes really of starting. We both, it was obvious watching it back, that we'd both forgotten that there were cameras on.
Right.
It wasn't just that he'd forgotten. I'd forgotten too. Because you just do. Because and he was making me laugh. And then I was going, no, don't say that. That's cruel. Don't say that to people. They might hear you. Shush. Because he'd open the windows and drove past people and say something offensive. But then then the second one I did was with my wife, which actually was her driving. We were going to London together. And it was a very sunny day. And it's so revealing of a relationship because, again, we both forgot they were on. And so there's me saying something, I'm doing diaries. So I'm going through my diary. I mean, it's really mundane stuff. It would be very boring to watch. But I say something like, well, on the Tuesday, I can't make it because I'm doing this. And you can, and I can't see her when I'm saying that. But what she's doing, she's forgotten the camera's there. She's going,
I'm glad you saved it.
Yeah, I have shown it to her. She's appalled.
Well, if I look at the list now, you've done, how many of these have you done? It looks like 50, 60, 70, 80, 100.
There's over 100, I think.
Yeah, there's 100 in iTunes right now for, with people like Cory Doctorow. I saw, he's great.
Stephen Fry.
Andy Iannotko, you did one, I guess, in Boston with
Andy. I picked him up. He was in London. I picked him up at the airport and drove him to his hotel.
How fun.
No, he was wonderful. Very fun.
This Star Trek captain guy. This is a really, it's fun. And you're right. It's very, I did one when you were out here, and it's very, do forget. It's very intimate. It's quite a hoot, actually. They're fun to do. I really enjoy them. So the camera is mounted to the windshield. Is that how you're doing it?
Yeah, there's two cameras. Some of them we did a series for Dave, a broadcast TV version of it where we had one.
Oh,
two,
I didn't
three,
know
four,
that. Oh, that's
seven,
neat.
Seven cameras. Yeah, so we used more cameras on that. So we could do cutaways, because that's the one of the cruelties of it, is that there's no
editing.
I can edit between the two cameras, so you can cut it down,
okay.
But there's no single shots. So there's a particularly cruel episode. If people want to laugh at my expense and be appalled at how bad I am at it, there's an episode I did with a wonderful guy called Professor Brian Cox. That's Stephen Fry
that's
at the
you
moment.
And Stephen. And driving around, arriving along. And just chatting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the classic episode, because he had to go from the BBC Television Centre in West London to the South Bank Studios in Westminster. He was going to do that anyway, that journey. So he was either going to have a car take him or I could take him. And so that's when that works really well. So the length of that carpool is about the length of that journey. There was very little cutting out of that one, that's when it works, is when you can fit in with people's lives, which most of the time I do. I mean, Cory Doctorow, I drove him to the airport very early in the morning.
That's so great. You started a story. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, it was only that Brian Cox is a physicist. He's an extraordinary brain and very well known figure in this country. And he was explaining to me the pressures that exist at the center of Venus. And what's cruel is, if you just had a single of him, it would be fascinating, because you'd watch him and he's so enthusiastic and knowledgeable. But unfortunately, you've got my face at the other side going, So you can actually see my brains melting, because I couldn't take it in. Oh, we nearly drove into a park. I mean, I just couldn't cope. I didn't know what the
heck. Oh, no.
He's such an extraordinary brain.
Oh,
amazing.
How funny. Oh, how funny. Well,
so it's a bit cruel.
I have it right here, actually. I want to see your face.
this
is great. But you've done so many now. I mean, really, this is a real collection of just fascinating people, and in a very unusual setting. I just think it works so well.
Now, do you continue to do the podcast as well as the Dave versions? Are you going to keep doing that?
You know, I'm going to keep doing them, because I mean, it was an interesting experiment doing the Dave versions, because it had always been, it was absolutely grown out of the internet, and that's what it was all about, and all the connections with people were through the internet and through Twitter. I mean, most of the kind of comedians that I would have known already through work and knocking around for as many years as I have, but I found amazing scientists and engineers and physicists that I just come across on the internet, and I'd email them and say, do you want to do this show? And they didn't know what the hell I was talking about, but because I could show it to them,
right?
I could send them a link and they could see it, and they could see that I wasn't too, so there, yeah, there's Brian Cox. So he's a very well-known figure in this country.
And a very confused
you
Bobby
can, even, even there, you can see that. Basically all I say is, wow. Someone counted up the number of wows in that episode. It's about 8,000. Wow. And he's really trying hard. He's really engaged.
You're very brave, Bobby, I got to say. Because you don't, you put that out. You don't mind.
Yeah, no. I've had to, I'm old enough now to accept that I'm
nothing
slightly
loose.
Idiotic. Yeah, exactly.
So the fact that you look like you're having a stroke there, it's just. It's,
yeah. That was me being as intelligent as I can.
I love it. But I there's something about this, and you just hit on a formula, and it just really works.
Yeah. And, yeah, and I mean, who would have known? Okay, it was such a bizarre combination of events that brought it into being that it was just impossible. I mean, for instance, the car that I started using was my own car. It's what I had. I had a Prius, and that's what I used it in. Well, I never thought to kind of approach someone like Toyota to say, can you give me a car? And then after about five episodes, the phone rang and it was a man from Toyota. And he said,
isn't that great?
Do you want a car? And I went, I don't know, really. What? I've got one already. He said, well, have another one. So then we had then I had a carpool car, which was, you know, I'm sure if I'd written to Toyota, it would have backfired and gone wrong. You know, I'm very glad it worked the way around it did.
Now, the Patrick Stewart is audio on iTunes. Is there a video as well? Did you do some of these in audio?
There was that's me not being very well organized and doing it on my own. I did try, because so many people wanted audio versions, that I did start to try and do them. And then I realized I'm going to keep this up. You know, that's when you suddenly realize you need staff.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire thing on my own. And it just became so time consuming, I couldn't. There's Patrick. He's a wonderful man.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I like is that you know, you could have pitched this. It's kind of high concept, and it's possible that some network would have bought it. But you wouldn't. It would have not been as informal and fun and relaxed and real as this. And that's kind of neat. I mean, it's a very authentic, genuine conversation between two people without a lot of editing. You know,
Well, it's also the other thing that was the problem I had with Dave, because Dave was very cool about that. They didn't impose anything on the structure of the programs, but they did narrow that I could have on, because they just wanted celebrities and comedians and that was always the point of it, was that I would mix and match. You know, so there's some people on there that are completely unknown. I mean, they're not public figures at all. Right. They're not. Big media stars or anything, but they have done amazing things. I mean, extraordinary knowledge and extraordinary experience, and from all walks of life. I mean, from farmers to nuclear physicists to, you know, solar energy experts to whatever, you know, a lot of different backgrounds.
We're talking to Bobby Llewellyn Crichton from Red Dwarf, and of course the host of Carpool and that green show thing that he does. So sad. I'm sorry, but you could see it at LewTube. If you go to LewTube.com, you can see Carpool is there as well as his fully charged show. And there are more fully charged coming, or
there are a lot more. No, we start shooting next week. So that is a sponsored show now. That is I'm very pleased to announce that we're sponsored by British Gas.
Wow,
which interestingly is a electricity company, which is classic for the British.
Of course,
I mean they do gas as well, but they're one
now
of the biggest
electric. Yeah, we have that here, Pacific Gas and Electric. They do both.
They do both, yes. So they're sponsoring the show, and we're doing 20 new episodes starting very soon. And I mean, it really does cover as much about renewable energy and smart metering, you know, and how to use energy more efficiently as it does electric cars. But we have got some amazing electric cars. There's this one car, the Drayson Lola, which is going to be at Le Mans this year. It is a 200-plus mile an hour electric car. It is absolutely groundbreaking. In fact, the man who is behind it, Lord Drayson, there is a carpool with him, and he does mention it in that. Because that was made a while ago before he built this car. But this car is truly spectacular. So there's some amazing electric vehicles coming.
So we'll have more with Bobby Llewellyn in the chat room and Twitter, and they're all saying, you've got to tell us more about the new Red Dwarf. You've got to tell us more. Got to tell us more. There's a guy in Australia who's just, like, demanding. I want details. So think of something you can say that will not get you in trouble, that will make them feel as if they've heard something unique and wonderful.
Goodness, all right.
Think about what that could be. Yeah. But first, we'll give you a minute, because I want to talk a little bit about Pond 5, the world's stock media marketplace. Many of you, I know, are like Bob. You know, you create your own media. And one of the things you need, as we know here, you need music. Sometimes if you're doing presentations, you'll want images. Video is great to have, stock footage, all of that, very affordable, royalty-free at pond5.com. What does royalty-free mean? It means you pay for it once, and then you can use it legally, instantly, in virtually any media production with no additional fees. So it's yours, basically yours to keep, and the price is right. Add the offer code TWIT25 on checkout. You'll get another 25% off. Look at this, this great video of Tokyo that you could add. you could make a movie. This is high-def video. You could make a movie and pretend you were in Tokyo or the desert or both.
Or that Tokyo has become a desert.
Oh, my God. It's all there. Pond5.com. Whether it's an establishing... Do you read these when you do the ad? Establishing video shot of Albuquerque, a time-lapse video of Tokyo.
I always read the Albuquerque one. Because it's just
it's like out of nowhere. It's here.
You want to remake Breaking Bad?
You're set.
Go for it.
There's no trailer, but you could probably get pants flying in the air. An aerial view of L.A., audio of a ticking bomb, or a music background for your next viral video. Images of palm trees, penguins, and pandas. And, you know, if you create video, one of the neat things, content of any kind, It's a marketplace where you can upload your content, set your own prices, and get industry-leading royalties on every sale. So it's a way for you to make money. Look at the quality of this video. It's just actually spectacular stuff. Pond5.com.
And when you buy it, you know, the watermark goes away in case you're looking at the video.
In case maybe people thought, no, we're too cheap to actually buy.
That's just plain that.
We're running that off the website. That's right. There's some cool stuff.
I really like the sound of that. I must admit, I've heard you mention it once before, but I'm just hoping I can use it in this country because I'll certainly.
Oh yeah, you can. It's global.
Yeah, they have global rights.
It's global, brilliant.
Global rights.
I mean, it's particularly like background music. I mean, I did a couple of videos last year for commercial things, and I had. I can't remember what the service is called in this country, but there's a music service for sort of background music, which once you've heard it, whenever you watch TV,
you hear it everywhere.
You hear that music all the time. But it was so good to be able to pick a specific sort of flavor of heavy metal for that one shot of the car, and then a bit of folky music for when there's trees. You know, it was fantastic to have that chance. You know,
you real totally, amazing totally choice. Need that. And there are 103,000 music cuts.
I'm going to be a.
This is some action adventure. Here, play.
The motion of the metal plating, the replaceable battery. And
I think they put. Oh, wait a minute. That's. I've got your show going on in the background. Wow.
Yeah.
There we go.
They put Robert
Lowe's
show in the water.
Music on the show. Okay.
You could use that.
Yeah, I could use that.
You could totally use that. Wow. How about something a little dramatic? I think I still have some view in the background here. Ah, dramatic music. Anyway, there's a lot of...
The car is coming to you. Yeah, no, I mean, it's just perfect for all those things. Oh,
yeah,
wonderful. I've got to...
Yeah, that's it. I'm going to go. 103,000. I actually want to... It makes me want to make something. I love it.
Yeah.
If you're a musician, again, a musician, an artist, a photographer, a videographer, this is a great place to go and sell your stuff as well. Set your own price. Pond5.com. Use the offer code TWIT25 for 25% off. Okay, there must be something you could tell us, Bobby, so that we can get a scoop. Something.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Let me think.
Okay, you've shot six episodes.
Six episodes,
yep.
That's with the original cast of the four of us.
The original cast, that's great. How about writers? It's the same writers or...?
Same writers, yeah. I can tell you the cameras we shot it on. We shot it on Red, the very latest Red camera, which you all know about. What's it? Red that's something cool. or
Epic? The Scarlet?
Red Epics.
Epics.
Red Epics. Yeah.
So it's in 4K. That's really great.
In 4K. The original footage is all in 4K. So
now that you do your own thing, do you kind of wander around in the back and say, well, let me see what they're, you know, how they're doing this? And I mean, I think we'll all be using Epics in a few years.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm generally, I tend to get on with camera crews very well. So I was mates with the camera crew there.
Yeah.
I was a bit geeky. And I'm a lot of fun is made of that by the rest of the cast.
Really? Like, because they're chasing after the girls in the makeup room, and you're going, well, let me really see that camera a little bit closer.
I think to be fair to all my fellow performers, no one's chasing after girls anymore. We're all a bit past that.
It's all old hat now.
You're walking at a brisk pace after girls.
We're mainly discussing various knee ailments and lower back problems. We're
having prevent you from chasing anyone.
And napping.
Yeah.
And napping. Now, what is good, and you did tell us this, and this is exciting, this was shot as the original Red Dwarf was in front of a live audience this time.
Yeah.
How was that? How did that feel?
The first night was pure terror for all of us. I mean, because I knew I'd be scared, but I thought, because the others are all professionals and they're all professional, they were terrified because we hadn't done it for such a long time. But the audience were fantastic, just amazing. And that first moment when you start doing a scene in front of an audience, it's so different from a live performance in, say, in a theatre, because your concentration is so much on, you know, hitting your mark,
right?
So that you're in shot and all those sort of things, and it came flooding back in a wave of terror. But once we got going in the scene and people laughed, there was a moment when we all stopped and kind of looked at each other and went, "All right, it is working."
Yeah,
and you know, there was a little gap there, but you know, it was enormous fun to do. I mean, very very frantic to get all the stuff done in front of the, you know, because it's a bit unfair to keep an audience in a studio for sort of 7 hours. So we had to do it in short, you know, very short, condensed lump.
Oh, so they don't do it. So here in the States, sometimes they will do, so you have a week and you'll do a table read and you'll do a dress rehearsal with a real audience and then you'll do it live. But you do it pretty much live. You weren't doing it.
Yeah. Live. Obviously, when we move sets, then the cameras would all have to move. So there would be a break. So we had a warm up man and we would do silly stuff in front of the audience.
But
generally, the scenes would be, they'd be done live as live, effectively. But I think it's always been the case of Red Dwarf because it's a complicated technical show. You know, if a sliding door has to open and something has to explode and the makeup is, you know, there's some complication with makeup, something's going to go wrong.
Right.
And it always does.
And it's usually with Craven's face, right, I think.
It's usually with my lines.
Oh, dear.
I've done that on many occasions. I've walked into the seat full of enthusiasm and there's, like, nothing comes out of the mouth, you know, just go, and I turn around and go out again.
You know, I'm sure the audience loves it. Did you get the sense that the people in the studio audience were Red Dwarf fans?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, big time. I mean, when they announced that the audience was going, I mean, that's how fast it happened. I got an email saying, this is the link for the where the tickets, you get the tickets from. Can you tweet it? And so I immediately copied it out and pasted it in Twitter and said, this is where you get them from. And within 40 seconds, I was getting tweets back saying they've all gone.
Oh, my goodness.
And then all the tickets for every show went in under 30 minutes.
But that's what you want. I mean, there is a friendly audience. Fantastic. I mean, these are the hardcore Red Dwarf fans.
Yeah.
That's so
great. So it was fabulous. And, that was a great fun. There is a wonderful, I'm not going to give away the plot, but there is a moment that really stands out. There's some time travel in Red Dwarf where the time traveling machine is of a Swedish design, and we have to put it together ourselves, and we do it so badly, of course, it goes wrong. And there's a fabulous episode where we're basically searching for a way to get back to our own time, but we've gone back in time quite a long way on Earth. And we meet a very significant figure, and it's buried into the dialogue very beautifully. It doesn't sort of reveal itself until the moment when the very famous historic figure turns around and introduces himself. And when you're rehearsing this, you're not sure this is going to work. It sort of looks a bit half baked, and you're not quite convinced. And when that moment happened in front of the audience, the actor playing the significant historical figure couldn't even say his line. They all got it immediately. The laugh was deafening. And that was a really wonderful moment when quite a complex, you know, Red Dwarf storylines are not simple.
Right.
They're dealing with some very complicated concepts of time, space, and you know, tears in the fabric of space-time and all that sort of thing. And for the audience to get it that clearly, they knew where we were, why we were there, and who this person was before they even said what we thought was the joke line. You
know? That's so great. That must really, that just made me feel good. You use Twitter a lot. You Bobby Liu on Twitter. I'm seeing people saying, how did I not know there was a new season of Red Dwarf in the works? And people are saying, he's talking about the show now. And, is Twitter an important part of you, your career, personal life?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder where it fits. It fits somewhere in between your career and your personal life, doesn't it? Because, I mean, it's certainly... I signed up to Twitter when I was in America. What year did Twitter launch?
2006.
I think it was late 2006. So I met somebody at an event.
That's very early.
But I didn't use it. I had an account for...
Same thing with
me. I think over a year.
I signed up that early, and I thought, that's stupid.
I signed up with it at CES when somebody introduced it to me. I made two posts, didn't go back to it for months.
Yep.
Yeah, no, exactly the same, Tom. No, I did exactly the same. And I think I said, what is... I think my first tweet was, what is this? Which is so banal, isn't it? And then I never looked at it at all. And then suddenly I started to hear about it. I'd hear people saying, oh, Twitter. And I go, well, I don't know. I've got a Twitter. What is Twitter? You know, and then I'd have a look at it. And it expanded from there. But I think when I first looked at it, I had 5,000 followers and I hadn't done anything. I didn't even know what it was, you know. So it was. And then I went, "Who are they? I don't know these people. What's going on?" You know.
Well, and you're prolific. I mean, this is I think that you have 34,000 tweets, almost 35,000. That's a lot of tweets.
That's a lot of tweets, isn't it? I'm embarrassed. I mean, I do answer a lot of questions, and I do it in. I have Twitter spurts, which I'm sure doesn't.
Oh dear.
You know, where I'll ignore it for 2 or 3 days, and then I'll get some interesting questions. Yeah. Me laugh and
but
I'll,
you spurt I'll a just, lot more than I do because I only have 5,000 tweets. So you've
5,000?
Spurted 30,000 times more.
Yeah, that's not good, is it? No, that's why I'm so exhausted.
Well, and I don't know how you find time to write as well, but you have another book, a new book coming out. How many books have you written now?
This will be my 12th.
Wow. News from Gardenia. Tell us about this.
Yeah. Well, this is doubly exciting. I mean, it's partly come out of the research I've been doing for Fully Charged. So a lot of that research is I've been talking to scientists who are working at the very cutting edge of what is technically, physically possible at the moment with the science we know now. And also some incredibly intriguing kind of engineering students. I came across a Dutch guy who... has made glass out of without burning anything. I mean, he's effectively used the heat of the sun to melt sand and make glass, as an experiment, but he's made glass bowls. I mean, it's an extraordinary thing he's done. And so this kind of led on to the idea of a utopian novel. I was very strongly influenced as a young man by this guy that's being shown on the video now, by William Morris, who is a kind of arts and craft designer in about 1860, who wrote a book called News from Nowhere, which was set in 1980.
Oh, wow.
And it was set in 1980 where Britain was this utopian dreamland of equality and gentle, you know, sort of what we'd now call green attitudes to the world. I mean, he was way ahead of his time in some times, but what was so tragic was the real 1980 in the UK was really rather unlike the one he envisaged, about as extremely unlike as you could possibly hope. And so I thought about utopias for a long time because they're generally a nightmare, aren't they? I mean, they're generally, it's the utopia is the camp in the jungle where everybody drinks the poisoned Kool-Aid and they're all dead, and it's a horrendous nightmare of a sort of hypocrisy and all that stuff. So I wanted to try and create a world which wasn't to envisage a world where the human race got it right, as opposed to making a mess. And in the sense by saying get it right, in that they didn't oppress each other, they didn't try and destroy each other's beliefs or fight or, you know, all those things. They kind of worked it out. They've got over it. They've matured. We're a sort of a mature race which doesn't mess everything up. And one of the key things that I sort of set myself the task of doing was that nobody burns anything to make anything else. That was the kind of base rule for the technology. So then, well, how on earth do you do that? How do you make stuff without burning stuff? And that's kind of where all the things I'd been learning about and talking to engineers about were in that field. It was about essentially sustainable high technology. you know, how do you make high technology and create stuff that helps human beings to communicate and to do things without burning things? And that, because if you burn stuff, you need fuel, and if you need fuel, you're going to run out of fuel. You know, it's those sort of things. So can it be done in a sustainable way?
Somewhat in the tradition of Gene Roddenberry, in that sort of, we're not going to have conflict. Your premise is we're not going to have conflict over resources.
Yes, because that's where we're headed very rapidly. I mean, you know, no matter what, really. So that was one side of it. But the other side of the kind of desire to write the book, the initial idea was very much to write a short form novel. News from Nowhere is not a long book; it's quite a short book. And I was determined to write a short book which I would then publish myself, not go through a traditional publisher. And in the process of while I was writing it, I came across this group of writers and ex-publishers who'd set up a thing called Unbound, which is where that the little animation you just shown is on their page.
This is kind of like a Kickstarter for books.
So it's a Kickstarter for books, exactly. It's crowdsourced publishing, and they've done about a dozen books so far that they've launched, and mine comes out on the 22nd of March. and it's been, I mean, against all my predictions, an amazing success. Now, that where you see the prices which people can pitch to buy or support the book and share the book, I said, look, no one's going to give 300 quid for a book. It's just crazy. Well, who's going to do that? Well, those sold out the first day.
Isn't that interesting? Well, I would. This Kelmscott sounds great.
Oh, Kelmscott is...
I want to do that. I would pay £200 to do that.
Yeah. No, but come and visit one day, Leo, and I'll take you around.
To get a tour with Bobby and visit William Morris's manor house in Oxfordshire.
Well, I mean, the great thing about that is the man I'm doing it with, a wonderful man called John Mitchinson, is a lifelong William Morris fan, and he knows him backwards, and he knows that house back. And it will really that tour will be amazing. It's a beautiful, beautiful Elizabethan manor on the river. It's a stunning
place. I'm not surprised these sold out. And then the £300 level, you get everything, including a racetrack test drive in an iconic electric car and lunch with Robert Llewellyn. I mean, so this you did this quite well. How much money did you raise?
We raised, about £22,000, I think, altogether.
Wow, that's great.
Towards the book, which is, you know, for a book that no one's read.
That's pretty good.
I mean, I've actually just heard today, it was a great relief to me, because I'm never sure. Well, you know, you can't tell.
It's always an experiment, I understand. Yeah.
But a proper publisher has read it and loves it, which is a great relief. And they're doing the paperback and all the other stuff. So it's also an audio book, it'll be an e-book, it'll be all those things.
And so you get to sell this even though you've raised money. So this is, in effect, you're getting the advance and the money to print them.
Yes. So we're printing a very kind of high-level... hardback version.
Oh, that's
it's very, very smart, beautifully done, and lovely typesetting, and it's really, really impressive. I haven't seen the full finished book yet. I've seen the galley proofs, but it really does look wonderful.
And you're using Audioboo, which is a great British company that I use as well for your audio book version.
That's right. Yes. No. That's. I mean, my audio. I've done. We did an experimental audiobook of The Man in the Rubber Mask, which is my autobiography of being in Red Dwarf, which was a book that went out of print a long time ago. So I've got the rights back to it. So I've recorded that book, and I've just, in fact, today recorded the first chapter of part two, which is bringing it up to date, which I will release after the final bit I will release after the new Red Dwarf's gone out.
Now, do they have a mechanism for paying, or is it free?
Yeah, no, that is paying. It's $4.99 for the audio.
So they have a way to do that. Oh, that's cool.
They now have a way to do that, which is great. Yeah. And it's the great thing about it, from my point of view, is I can feed into that feed, so it's not like a set lump of audio material that you can't change. So I can feed into that feed and put new stuff in, which is what I'm doing. So once you bought the book for $4.99, you get the original book, but then you'll get all the other chapters for no extra cost.
It'll just appear in podcast together, really.
So it's like a podcast. I mean, it's very specifically about Red Dwarf and wearing rubber.
And who? Two of my favorite subjects.
That's a pitch right there, right?
So that's cool. So that's audioboo.fm, and you can search for Bobby, and you'll find it. There it is, the man with the rubber mask. That is really, really neat.
Is there? I mean, think about all the things that you do. You're a podcaster. You're a TV star. You're a stage performer. You're an audiobook reader.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Is it? The Wikipedia says you were a shoemaker. Is that?
No.
Yes, I was. A long time ago in another life. Yeah, I did an apprenticeship as a bespoke shoemaker, like a proper classical shoemaker when I was about, how old was I? 19, 20 years old.
Your folks thought you should have a real skill.
Oh, my folks were so depressed about that. I mean,
They were depressed that you were a shoemaker?
Well, I mean, they had groomed me to be an academic. My mother's dream was for me to really look like Prince Charles did when he was sort of a teenager, wear tweed jackets with leather elbow patches, have a nice side parting, and go to Oxford University. You know, and eventually, I did go to Oxford University, but I worked in the kitchens at Brasenose College. So that was I was a very big disappointment for them. You know, but they recovered from it.
Well, yeah, nobody's disappointed now, I'm sure.
No, it's an impressive career.
It's so great to talk to you again. And of course, the time flew by as usual. And I wish we had some more time. But we have so many things to cover, like all the different things that you do. When will you bring back Carpool? Do you know?
I'm sure this year. I mean, it's really down to, I think what will happen, I don't want to say this because I don't want any potential sponsor to go, all right, we won't bother, but I think I'll probably do them anyway.
Slow anybody down. They're still going to come to you.
But I mean, you know, there's a couple of car companies that are very interested in sponsoring it, and I'm sort of hoping that they will step up. But it's, you know, it's kind of, I'm playing in the back seat at the moment. I'm letting clever people who know about sponsorship sort that out, because whenever I try and do it, I say the wrong thing and it all goes horribly wrong.
And and who's your dream carpooler?
Oh, goodness.
Who do you want to get right up front?
Actually, I mean, the one that I got very close to, which was the last time I was in America. I'm trying to think if I didn't come and see you that time. I got very close to getting Kiefer Sutherland.
He said
he'd do it. He wanted to do it, but it was just timing. It was the same old problem. But he wanted to do it in character as Jack Bauer, which I just thought
that would have been great.
He would essentially kidnap me and force me to drive at gunpoint, you know. If it was only 3 minutes long, it would have been great fun to do, but I don't know that that'll ever happen again. You know,
well, if Ford is listening, Scott Monty, this is the got to Ford should sponsor Carpool. It would be the best thing
ever.
Well,
it would be great.
They've got the hybrids.
The electric focus on the hybrids, absolutely. No, I'd be very happy. Yeah. Very happy.
Be awesome.
Man, match made in heaven.
Thank you so much, Bobby. It's like 1 a.m. there.
It is 1:05 in the morning. I feel like it's breakfast time. I'm very
full of choices. Well, let's go get some
kippers.
Get some kippers and some porridge.
Bangers and mash. Thank you. Thank you so much. Again, Lewtube, LEWTUBE.com is the place to go to find Robert Llewellyn's wonderful stuff. Look for Red Dwarf in March, coming back Is that right?
No, in September. Where are we? Yeah, no, September.
September? It's all done. What takes so long?
Well, I think it's this thing to do called post-production.
Oh, I see. I don't believe in that. We don't do that
exactly.
Here.
Yeah. That's what I said to them.
What are you, crazy?
Don't worry about that. Just slap it up now.
Put it on the internet. and look for news from Gardenia. That's next month.
That's next month. Yes, it is.
Tomorrow.
It is March the 1st. Yeah. Yes, yeah. It is for me now.
Tomorrow.
Yes,
this month.
Happy March.
Yeah. Will you wear a leek on your lapel for
a little
St.
What?
David's Day?
St. David's Day.
Wear a little leek. I should do. Yes, I've got a bit of Welsh blood in me. That's very true. Yes, as you can tell by the name. Long time ago.
Too many consonants.
Thank
you. Thank you, Bobby. It's great to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Robert Llewellyn. That was fun.
Ah, I love talking to you, Bobby.
You're a little Welsh, aren't you?
I have probably less Welsh than he does.
Well, he's very Welsh.
There's some very far back there, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I forgot. So you're supposed to wear a leek on your lapel?
On St. David's Day, yeah.
And that's today or tomorrow?
That's March 1st, yeah.
March 1st.
Would have been today. Stupid leek year.
And you use Squarespace for your blog, it looks like. Oh, man.
I do. And I tell you what, Leo, I'm really a good advert for your advertising. I use Drobo's. I use Squarespace. There's something else that you advertise. Well, I got to
hook you up with Ford. That's what I got to do.
Well, Ford. I mean, please do.
Hook you up with Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting. I had to go in the Focus last year, the electric Focus.
It's really great. It's a beautiful car.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, I'm going to move my blog to the new Squarespace 6. You got to ask him about 6.
I've met a young person, a young man who's very good on the internet, because I would love to be able to make my. I mean, I did that in a minute. You know that Squarespace blog, and I mean, I use it a lot. I write a lot of stuff on it, but it could look a little bit better. You know, it shows the level of my skill is very, very low. And so it would be good to get a bit more look in it. But
all right, I'm going to let you go get your kippers or go to bed. One of the
and I should go to bed. I'll leave the kippers for the morning.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Thanks so much. Bye bye.
Cheers. Take care. Bye bye.
Great to see you. Come back and see us. The Lewblog, LLEWBLOG. There it is. That's squarespace.com. Observations from a happy old man. He is too. You could just tell he's jolly.